technology and human connection. Putting those two things together when it comes to healthcare. Technology equals process, people equals emotions. And looking at automation to reduce friction, reduce forms, reduce wait times, looking at it from a standpoint of patients should always have access to a real person. As a choice for our patients, my goal is efficiency without losing empathy. And most of our AI tools can do both, but there are people who want human connection.
Hi, I'm Chris Malone, and I'll be your host for today's discussion. Thank you for joining us. I'd like to start by welcoming our friend, colleague, and program partner, Liz Schuler. Liz is Director of Marketing for Plaintree, which is a global not-for-profit organization dedicated to humanizing healthcare for everyone through person-centered care. Welcome, Liz. What can you tell us about our guest today?
Hi, Chris. Thank you. I am so pleased to introduce Lisa Griffin, the Chief Consumer Officer, Consumer Experience and Patient Access at University Hospitals, a renowned academic medical system and integrated community hospital network. In this role, she leads the organization's commitment to improving the patient experience and making healthcare more accessible and equitable for patients and families across Northeast Ohio. Lisa oversees numerous strategic initiatives focused on modernizing patient access, as varied as improving EHR systems, enhancing digital capabilities, and optimizing call centers and customer service functions with cutting-edge technologies. Her work is guided by the belief that patient access should be seamless and the highest level of customer expectations. Before she joined University Hospitals, Lisa held significant leadership positions at her health systems across the country. She served as the Vice President of Patient Access Services at Vanderbilt University Medical Center, contributed in multiple leadership roles at the Houston Methodist Hospital, and held a significant tenure as a member of the leadership team at Cleveland Clinic. With over 30 years of experience in healthcare management, Lisa is an active leader in her field, receiving recognitions, frequently speaking at major conferences, and publishing best practices in patient experience. Lisa, we are delighted to hear from you today. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Liz. And welcome, Lisa.
Thank you. And thank you for having me.
So to start us off, I would love to hear the story of how you chose a career in healthcare. Where did it all begin for you?
It is very simple, and it probably was not me choosing healthcare. It was just a serious desire to serve people and make a difference. I actually saw my dad do it every day. I saw my mom do it as a nurse, and they were just people that helped others. And I think even my early experiences showed access in healthcare was my first impression of getting people to services so that their lives can get better. And it all came from that. And I saw like stress, and I saw people get comfort from making sure their health was better. And then it was okay. I think that's something that I want to do, help people, and I can do that in healthcare. So that's really how it started, just by watching my parents help others, and I chose to go in this direction.
Terrific. That's a great illustration of the impact and inspiration we get from our parents.
Oh, yeah.
Now, your title at University Hospitals is rather interesting, Chief Consumer Officer. That's kind of unique and perhaps forward-thinking as a role in a health system. I was wondering if you could tell us about what that means at University Hospital and what that emphasis on consumer, how that impacts your approach to access and experience.
If you think about the word consumer, that signals that there's broader expectations. And why shouldn't people have them as it relates to their healthcare? So consumer was intentional because it's like retail, hospitality, banking, where you're always anticipating the next thing. And so this role ensures that care feels seamless, accessible, is personalized. And then that consumer title also keeps us focused that people have choices of things being convenient. They have choices of who they want to trust. And then lastly, I would say that it balances consumer expectations that there is this sacredness between a patient and a provider and that relationship, and that patients have choices or people have choices. So we kept it in that broader perspective because the expectations are actually broader when you say consumer.
Well, very interesting, because we often hear that in healthcare, this notion that patient access and personalization should be no less in healthcare than it is in other aspects of their lives, whether it's e-commerce or retail or other things. And it sounds like University Hospitals is really kind of putting the title out to show that that's the case.
You're exactly right. That title means that we are looking at you as a consumer with choices, and that extends to choices as it relates to your personal health. And we're saying, hey, we want to make sure that we're meeting your expectations when you think about healthcare services. It's just like a bank, that you'll tell 10 people about your experience, and then that cascades out to healthier communities. It allows our communities to trust us. And so we are definitely thinking of it in that way.
Got it. Now, you have a pretty wide-ranging mandate at University Hospitals, inclusion of patient access as well as patient experience. I'm wondering, what are your priorities in those differing areas? And are there any examples of initiatives that you're working on that you can share?
Let me just say, I am not the Office of Patient Experience. My role is the digital front door. Like, when you make your choice, I need to make sure whether it's a digital choice, whether it's a phone choice, whatever way you choose to engage us, that it is clear and accessible and it meets your needs. So that's my job, inclusive of any vendors that want to engage with us. They come through my area. We talk to them. We find out use cases. So I'm responsible for that. All the way from there, all the way to a clean bill dropping is my responsibility.
Wow.
So that means that pre-cert, financial counseling, everything that surrounds our patient when it comes to the services that we deliver. But there is a new initiative, and it is called the Consumer Experience. And I launched that almost a year ago. Our organization, rightfully so, saw that that was something that we should do, change the mindset from hospital to hospitality. And so we launched that a year ago, and we trained all of our front-end staff. And then more recently, we trained all of our executives on this concept of welcoming and understanding that people have choices. And so that will be something that our organization will be standing up as when we hire people. We'll be looking for those high-touch customer service skill sets. And then we will have ongoing training every year and competencies around the consumer experience.
Well, that's fascinating that you have experience responsibility for things like billing, which is certainly much broader than many patient experience officers have responsibility for, and frankly, is certainly something that patients experience, and it's often not their favorite part of the experience. And so the fact that you have oversight of that whole digital journey and access journey, I think, is really interesting. I know that also you've got some things going on with artificial intelligence underway at University Hospital that may help elevate patient access. I was wondering if you could tell us about those and help us explain and understand how they're impacting patient access.
Well, the first thing we did is introduced it a few years back in our phone tree and in our phone system, in our call center, to get our patients to the right areas with just them being able to engage without having to, they can do self-service and all those things. So we kind of introduced it in that way. And then we said, hey, we're having some shortages with staffing for pre-certification. Is there something out there that can do this for us? Look at the notes, go in and pull the information and actually send it to our insurance carriers without us having human interaction, which will allow our other skilled employees to actually deal with patients who have highly complex items. And so we actually use AI for pre-certification. Then we use AI for our physicians. We have pilots going on right now, so where our physicians can actually use it with their note writing so they're more engaging with their patients and they can connect with them emotionally in the moment. So we're using it for that. And we also have it as an available tool for our physicians in their note-taking for suggestive information as an enabler. So we are absolutely an AI organization, but it doesn't stop there. We're actually looking at it in some other broader ways to use it with other companies as well.
And what are some of those other areas that you're looking at?
Let me just say it to you like this. Imagine the notes. Like we today, our current tool does not send in notes. That's kind of stuff we have to do. But there are some tools out there that can actually send those supportive notes out to our insurance carriers, things of that nature. For more complex things, maybe some of our radiology things that we're doing based on diagnostics and things of that nature, we're very, very open to using AI. We actually have an AI committee under our compliance department that makes sure that we use it in the right way, but we're definitely open to using AI, whether it's in the interactions with, imagine a patient being in a room and being able to connect with someone and answer questions that they may have when there's not someone available in that moment and they can get their question answered. So anything like that that can help us actually meet some of our staffing shortages would be, whether it's in the call center, whether it's on the front end when our patients call to do self-service. Maybe think about MyChart. If a patient has to interact and they have questions about MyChart, being able to have some type of function right in the beginning where they can do self-service, we're open to exploring multiple areas when it comes to AI.
Got it. And as you evaluate these different tools and you've got your AI committee and so forth, how do you make the judgments as to what is the right way to use it versus what may not be the right way to use it? You know, the human connection and empathy and relationships are so important in healthcare. How do you know what is the right or perhaps less appropriate way to use AI? Is there a line that helps you define that, or how do you make those judgments?
This is how I look at it. Technology and human connection. Putting those two things together when it comes to healthcare. Technology, in my opinion, equals process, people equals emotions. So looking at automation to reduce friction, reduce forms, reduce wait times, all those things that humans, quite frankly, want for themselves. Looking at it from a standpoint of patients, it should always have access to a real person. So if they choose to, but there are people out here who they may not have the time and they may want to engage you in a different way. And having that way available as a choice for our patients, that's how I look at it. Anything that my goal is efficiency without losing empathy. And most of our AI tools can do both, but there are people who want human connection. They want a real person every single time. And I think we all have a family member like that. My husband's one who calls a credit card company and he would holler representative 10 times. So that's his choice. And so we should always have that human choice for the patient. And then we should also have that self-service avenue for our patients as well. So it's the patients drive what they want to use and how they want to engage. And we have to be ready for the changes and the challenges.
Yeah, I think you mentioned something really important there. And that's the idea that patients should always have access to a human if they desire it. And that we're not all have the same expectations, right? We don't all have the same needs and requirements from a clinical standpoint. We shouldn't assume that patients have the same needs and preferences from an experiential standpoint either. So I think that's really key.
Absolutely.
And so as you have kind of been moving through this, what are the metrics that you're able to track? You're able to measure your success or the impact, or now how do you define success as you implement these pilots and programs with AI?
Well, we use AI for everybody. So just think about it like this. We had, prior to using a tool for our pre-certification authorizations, we were out probably a week because of staffing and things of that nature. We're out well over 28 days. So any of our surgical cases and things of that nature, we're seeing the results of just being out a week or so versus 28 days in that first call resolution, first contact resolution, I should say. So that means that if a patient chooses an AI route and they want that self-service, that we look at that is a diversion and that patient has their needs met and they're based on their choice of engaging. So we look at that. From a first contact resolution, was that patient able to resolve their need or get their need met on that first contact using that AI platform? And we look at the percentage of that as well. Our fill rates with our appointments. So immediately asking a patient from a digital perspective or a contact perspective, if they say they're canceling their appointment, they've never engaged anyone, being able to have an interface that comes back to them and gives them choices where they never have to speak to anyone. So we look at those rates. Was the patient able to actually engage at the way they wanted to engage, whether it was using AI? We look at it in every way that they connect with us. But especially using AI, has it allowed us to be more nimble? And we look at that. We actually look at our patient satisfaction, our net promoter score using AI. And we've seen, even in our call center setting, we've seen those numbers go up just by having it on the front end with their entry into the organization. So all of these things point us to being very intrigued with the use of AI.
Terrific. Now, you know, you mentioned things like wait time, which of course, I don't know any humans that want more wait time instead of less wait time. And so that is often a big part of what patients provide feedback about in their patient experience feedback. I'm wondering, to what extent are you working closely with your patient experience colleagues on some of these things, or how do those two things meet or intersect?
To think of it in this way, our patient experience colleagues are, even in our area, is our handoff, or they may hand off things to us.
I see.
So when things don't go as we look at it two ways. We share best practices when things go well, like let's keep doing these things. This is what our patients expect. So we meet with them every month, and we also dissect our press gainy data with our patient experience office, and we take that information down to the practice, the physician level, down to even if the patient has something that they want to say about our floors, anything. And so we interact with our Office of Patient Experience office. We have a direct line to them with our MIDAS information. MIDAS is a tool that we use if something doesn't go well. All those things are entered into MIDAS to ensure that we meet the needs and that we address any concerns from our patients. So we're intertwined almost daily into end-to-end patient experience.
It sounds like it. Now, the healthcare industry is constantly adapting to new technologies. And I'm wondering, what are some other things that you're seeing coming down the pike, perhaps in addition to AI, that are likely to impact patient access, consumer experience, things of that nature?
More so AI and predictive analytics. So if you think about it, predictive analytics, say anticipating your no-shows, using predictions for your outreach, taking your information from an AI perspective and predicting like what it would be the outcomes. Is there a patient population out there that we're not addressing based on what we see systematically? And then there's this thing that our board member said to me a number of years back. He said, I want you to know that I need to be seen even before I know. So being able to do that outreach to patient populations, because if you just saw the study that came out, and I read a little bit about it, where men tend to drop off in healthcare after their pediatric days. So after they get past that pediatric age, they tend to drop off. So it is our job to ensure that we reach out and make sure that we anticipate their health maintenance needs. So using something that predicts, like based on age and things of that nature, when we need to engage and find that those patient populations that have not engaged healthcare in a meaningful health maintenance way. So really understanding that, using personalized digital experiences, patients choose how they engage. So really mapping back to it being personalized. So you know how in some electronic health records, it'll say, how do you want for me to engage you? I anticipate, and I know this may be far reaching, but I do that sometimes, but I anticipate the consumer's choices, whether it's healthcare or in a retail shop, all converging. So even in healthcare, you don't have to tell me how you want me to engage with you where I have to check a box. It is kind of looking at your patterns of how you like to engage, whether it's on a consumer way, in a retail fashion, or in healthcare, and being able to personalize that experience for you without you telling me.
Yeah. I do think, though, that you mentioned something really important. One is giving patients and consumers the choice as to how they want to engage. And I do think there's something important about taking the time to do that, that asking what matters to me, remembering what matters to me, personalizing my experience from there, versus sometimes things that feel like they just rummaged through my digital trash without asking me. I went on vacation outside the country last week. You didn't ask me about that, but somehow you seem to know that. You don't get the same kind of credit for being interested, asking, gaining permission, and personalizing from there. So I think that you mentioned something important there, giving patients the choice of what they want. And then you get credit for taking note of that and changing the way you engage them as a result.
Yeah, and taking that to the next level. But I just think that there is a patient population that chooses the latter. Imagine if I don't engage you and you've not engaged healthcare. This is the difference in healthcare. And I haven't engaged you based on age milestones of health checks or things of that nature. And I didn't get a chance to ask you. You're just listed as a covered line. We did this sometime last year. We just said, okay, who are those covered lives that we haven't engaged? Let's engage them. They haven't engaged us. They haven't told us that I'm seeking you for care. Yet the first week, we scheduled over 900 appointments. Why? Because we anticipated, based on the health maintenance needs of that patient population who didn't engage us, and then we tracked it. Did they show up? Yeah, a high percentage of those patients showed up, very little no-shows. So I think there's a balance on both sides of that. We just need to figure out what that is.
Yeah, you make a good point. You don't get the chance to ask someone if they don't see you in the first place. Yes. So what does it take to get them to see you in the first place?
Yes.
And so you've got a really deep background in operations. And all of these technology initiatives and applications that you're describing would seem to have a big impact on processes in the organization. And I'm imagining that part of applying and implementing these requires the system to change a lot of those policies and processes as well. Is that the case? And has AI enabled that?
AI is an enabler. We had some processes already in place. Even before AI, we had it for technology as a whole. So we've always looked at technology from a way of having a console that actually ensures that we do our due diligence with the technology. Second, that it is something that is fiscally prudent for our organization, that is going to drive the right outcome. So we've always had that operational foresight on. And then I just look at it in that sense. So we do have one, an access console. So imagine it this way. The inflow, it comes in. Your technology needs to tell us. We send you a link. When you tell us you want to engage us with the technology for healthcare, we send you a link. You say, here's something about my technology. Here's some use cases. Here's some people we've done those use cases with. And then we have a bank that says, here's all the things we're looking for. Hey, you meet this one. And so my job and my team's job is to connect those two parties together to have a conversation, to say, yes, these two things need to come together and decide, is this the right tool for our organization? So we absolutely have a process. And then when say something doesn't go right from an operational standpoint, or someone's trying to go outside of our standards, we actually have an access console, which is physician leaders, our operational leaders that actually can have a conversation about it. And either they make your case for you, or they say, hey, this is what they want to do, and they escalate it to us executives, and then we review it for approval or say, hey, not what we're looking for at this present time. So absolutely, there is an operational process for everything.
Got it. Well, it sounds like University Hospitals is a little bit further along than some organizations in their application of some of these new technologies. As a mentor and a leader for up-and-coming healthcare executives, I'm wondering, what advice would you offer to listeners who might either aspire to be a chief consumer officer or help apply artificial intelligence tools in their organization? Any words or wisdom, rules of thumb, or watch-outs that you would offer?
I would tell anyone, like, have a broad understanding of operations. Don't pigeonhole yourself to one thing. Like, you need to know finance. People don't understand that healthcare is a business. And if you don't look at healthcare as a business, you'll start seeing the same thing happen to your organization and challenges, and they'll be actually worse than what we're dealing with now. So imagine not understanding healthcare as a business and the financial part about it. Our patients want the same thing. So we need to know that operationally, that we're actually operating and we have some financial acumen. Understanding what patient access is outside of a buzzword. People say patient access all the time. What does that mean? Patient access, understanding that it is the choices in which a patient wants to engage you, that those levers are open and unrestricted. And then the other side of that is understanding clinical workflows. If you don't understand clinical workflows, how do you engage your clinical partners as well? So sometimes people say, oh, I'm just in this lane. I don't need to understand over here. But having some understanding of those workflows from a clinical perspective. And the thing I'm going to say for me, and it's just my personal opinion, develop empathy and listening skills. You have to be able to be inquisitive, empathetic, and listen sometimes, and then understand service excellence, even if it's in a retail or hospitality. Like, I've toured Curail, their factory. I go into the school systems. Understand your market, where you're doing business. Who are your patients? What's your patient population? Who are they? Who are you serving? It's just like a business. Wouldn't you want to know who are my consumers that are choosing me? It's the same thing. and find a mentor. Leadership and experience requires guidance and collaboration. So you need a mentor or someone who has that those mentoring skills.
Excellent. Let's take a few questions from our listeners. Here's one from Ebony Langston. She says, I really appreciate the perspective of the patient as a consumer and having all patient experience touch points going through one leader. Have you been able to make a tie to how this strategy has impacted health outcomes?
Oh, my goodness. Thank you. That's a great question. I'm probably one of those people who always want to see health outcomes. So we partner with our ACO. We partner with them to make sure that what we're doing is actually combating some things from a health outcome standpoint. One of our doctors, Dr. Shishamore, who's a cardiologist, actually did a redlining study. So can you imagine the redlining study based on inputs that we put in the system that shows those patients that have needs and then identifying those patient populations and making sure that we address those needs of those patient populations. And then we're actually seeing some broader out, some better outcomes, people with diabetes, heart disease, and things of that nature. We absolutely tie those two things together to make sure that the services we're providing, that they have an impact on the health of our communities. It is essential and helpful.
Glad to hear it. We have another question from Hassan at SMC Healthcare in Saudi Arabia. Do the AI tools you're using deal with patients in multiple languages? And how has artificial intelligence perhaps impacted satisfaction for those patients that interact with it?
Well, Hassan, listen, I need you. Yes, we need something like that. That is something that would help us tremendously. Of course, we do have some translation software, but that would be one area where I would tell you that is worth exploring to a deeper level. I'll just say it that way.
Got it. We've got a question from Karenisa Ismail. He says, healthcare has traditionally focused on standardization. What challenges might physicians, nurses, or pharmacists face when tailoring services to meet individual patient needs? What are your thoughts on that?
Standardized as a default. That is it. Standardized as a default, you individualize when appropriate. So there are some things that are given that you're going to standardize, of course. You're going to make sure patients are safe. These are questions that need to be asked. But there is some individualized things that could take place. And let me explain that. There could be an office in your market in a certain area based on a patient population that you need to address differently. You need to make sure, like those languages that we talked about earlier, that it's available there. So there are times where you do individualize based on the patient's need, but I standardize as a default, but you never want to be so cookie cutter that you're not innovative, that you don't think outside of the box or differently based on a need of an individual patient. Patients want personalized services, maybe in your language, maybe knowing who they are when they call. Sometimes they want a CRM tool that, so you know the last time they called and what they called for, being able to personalize the conversation with them. Knowing who they are when they pop up on your screen in a call center, all those types of things are things where I think we can be a little more personalized.
Now, I think you make a good point that patients do want that personalization. That personalization is evidence that we have a relationship. And standardization is just a starting point, but that's not the stopping point. And if I get treated exactly the same way, asked all of the same questions over and over again, regardless of how many times I visit, that's evidence that we have a transaction and not a relationship.
Absolutely.
So let's move to our final question. It's one of our favorites. Do you have a favorite quote? And if so, can you share it and tell us why?
Oh, this is funny. Yes. And it's Maya Angelou. And I think everybody kind of understands this. Is people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. Why does that resonate with me? Because healthcare is about lasting emotional impressions. So that's why it is my favorite quote. Even in life, you can still translate that to everything that you do. Technology and systems may evolve, but how you make people feel is timeless.
It's absolutely one of my favorites as well. And it's not just poetry. There's science behind that, because we are emotional beings. And as much as we think all of our decisions are based on our rationale and our logic and so forth, the reality is 80% of what we do is driven by our emotions. And so nothing could be more true. So thank you so much for sharing that one.
Thank you.
Lisa, it has been a real pleasure talking with you today. Thank you for this insightful and inspiring conversation. I'm sure our listeners will agree. We're really grateful for the wisdom and perspective that you shared with us. To our listeners, thank you as well. We hope you found our discussion informative and inspiring. And be sure to join us for another episode of Humanizing Healthcare in the future. We'll be talking to more healthcare thought leaders and innovators. Thanks very much, everyone, and have a great rest of your day.